Hey, everybody. Welcome to independence.podomatic.com. Glad you showed up. Glad you're listening to the audios that I'm putting out. Now I'm going to talk about a variety of different things, things that we take for granted. And I'm going to talk about acids and how we need acids. And it's crucial that we maintain healthy acid levels in our body, because without those acid levels being where they should be and doing what they're supposed to be doing, like butyric acid, propionic acid, oleic acid, lactic acid, acetic acid, these are acids that we need. They're vital to our existence. All those acids I just mentioned protect the colon. Butyric acid and propionic acid are very powerful agents to protect you from tumors that can grow in the colon. Anything that you do to neutralize those acids puts you in a state of being compromised. And it's, again, it's one of those states that, if you're in that state, you're more than likely going to have some kind of tumorous growth in the colon as a result of the lack of those acids. They are that crucial. They're that crucial to your health. They are that crucial to almost every aspect of our health. I'm going to talk about oleic acid. I'm going to start off with that one. This is one acid that's required to produce healthy myelin. Without this acid and without other components like wheat germ oil and taurine and other components that can help repair the myelin, and this one's very crucial for that repair and to regenerate. Where it's important for proper membrane fluidity, hormone responsiveness, infectivity of pathogens, mineral transport, and immune competence are affected by membrane fluidity. Oleic acid is catalyzed to acetyl groups used for energy for ATP production. It works with B5 in creating an ATP production by affecting the acetyl coenzyme A factor. So it's one of those things that help. Sources of rich in oleic acid are olive oil, avocado oil, almond oil, and avocados. Now, you can do some more research on it. You can find more and more the impact of oleic acid and other sources where you can get it from. Consuming high levels of omega-9 can be problematic. Now, we've got magnesium stearate in the vitamins, and you've heard that that could be problematic. Well, here, let me read something to you. Stearic acid is rapidly converted to oleic acid. Okay. It converts to oleic acid, so there's no real danger with the stearic or the stearate that's in there, because it's an acid bound with magnesium. Both stearic acid, magnesium and stearic acid, support and sustain the heart. So some of the things that we're listening to and hearing on the up and up isn't exactly what they're saying. Somebody's is doing something, or somebody's not looking at the research correctly. The benefits, okay, of extra virgin olive oil or omega-9s, this is again, we're going into oleic acid. It has phytosterols, sterols, and stanols are structurally similar to cholesterol. Stanols are saturated sterols and less abundant in nature than sterols. Basically, this is the building block for testosterone. One of the things that you guys can use to help in the building of testosterone. You need these phytosterols to, again, activate this growth. It also has in it different things to actually help protect the prostate. One of the things is B-acetylsterol. So when we're looking at some of the stuff going on, it also has in it tyrosol, hydroxytyrosol, apigenin, luteolin. These specific antioxidants here, they have anti-estrogenic effects. They block estrogen in the system, so and they help in binding to estrogen receptor sites. So these are some of the things that this is your olive oil now as a whole. The phenol. Okay, that's oleoxidation. Okay, we got that. And get back to the oleic acid. Okay, oleic acid reduces blood pressure, increases fat burning, helps it again with weight management, protects cells from free radical damage, may prevent type 2 diabetes, can prevent ulcerative colitis, and generates brain myelin. This is coming from an acid. This is coming from an acid. Okay, milk fat contains 25% oleic acid. That's the cream. Oleic acid is a monounsaturated omega-9 fatty acid with many health benefits. Okay, one of the things that it can do, like I said, we're talking about in reducing blood pressure. It regulates the activity of the adrenal receptor, signaling pathways which direct the androgenic receptors, A and B receptors, that help regulate blood pressure. So there you go. And this is coming from an acid. Oleic acid may help you burn fat. It normalizes and increases fat oxidation or fat burning. They found that oleic acid increases the expression of genes involved in fat burning. So, and you can find oleic acid by itself. You don't even have to buy the olive oil. It's relatively inexpensive. They found that oleic acid increases expression, for fat burning. In addition, oleic acid accelerates rates of complete fat oxidation in muscle cells. So it allows the muscles to use the fats more efficiently for power. And again, if you are using an olive oil, it will have it in it, but it won't be a pure acid. So you may want to look at investigating at least the oleic acid as a means to, increase and improve your health or to help you recover. Diets rich in oleic acid prevent ulcerative colitis. People of the highest amounts of oleic acid were 89% less likely to have ulcerative colitis than those consuming the least amount of oleic acid. Ulcerative colitis is also coming from the grains. Any of the grains you're consuming today will have high levels of genetics, high levels of nano embedded into the grain itself. So when it gets down to the lower GI, it may also have smart dust. This is another thing that is a recent discovery. Smart dust may be also embedded in the colon, which would further exacerbate ulcerative colitis, IBS, leaky gut, and a whole host of other intestinal disorders. But when you use this, it can help heal the ulcers, the oleic acid. I always state mantra is the same: no grains, no breads, no rice, no pasta, no corn, no soy, no cereals, no pseudo grains like quinoa, millet, buckwheat. These need to be removed. Any grain out there, any grain-like material that they're selling for bread should be avoided. They will have loaded them up with a nanosilica, the same stuff that you guys are using for diatomaceous earth. They are putting in their, again, genetic material. They are spraying nano sprays on the fields, on the grains and whatnot. They are using glyphosates. So this is one of those things that it does embed. It does penetrate, permeate, and saturate into the very genetic code of the very plants they're using. So any grains you consume is going to cause you damage. There's no way around it. And it would be to your best interest to learn how to change your eating habits. You need to go more toward a protein fat base in order to sustain the hormones, the cellular integrity, the muscle tissue, the brain, the immune system, enzyme production, on and on and on. If you are going to eat vegetables today, they should be root-based. They will have the least amount of nano exposure than the broad leaf plants. If you're talking cabbage, you're talking lettuce, you're talking kale, you're talking chard, collards. These are all broad leafy vegetables that would have a full complement of nano sprayed on them, either through the farming process or from the chemtrails above. The concept of organic is all but dead. The farmers who are trying their best to grow whatever they're going to grow, they've been seriously bamboozled. No matter what you put in the ground today, with the saturation levels of glyphosates, atrazine, organosilicates, and a whole host of other components that they're spraying, unless they're filtering the earth itself to remove those particulates, it's going to be in the food table. There's no way around it. There's always going to be cross-contamination, whether there be bees, sparrows, squirrels, rats, mice, you know, other birds, insects, you know, grasshoppers. There's always going to be some carryover, the wind, weather, you know, it's always going to be there. And anything that you see up in the sky, those lines in the sky are not condensation, for those of you who still have this concept in your head. I'm assuming those of you who have been listening to my programs recognize that I recognize those as chemical trails or toxic exhaust, if you will, coming out of an airplane. And as a result of that, what that material is, as it spreads and is being released into the atmosphere, is coming down on our food supply. You need to look at alternatives for food growth, food health. Because a lot of things that you're assuming today has been based on a 1970s concept. The health food industry has been rehashing the same old stuff over and over for the last four decades in order to keep maintaining the status quo. Grains are done. Doesn't matter what grain you eat, doesn't matter what rice you consume, doesn't matter what wheat you buy, it all has the contaminants in it. It either has genetic material, it either has nanomaterial, it'll have whatever else they've done to it, and then they've added nano to it. So the research that I have on that goes way back to 1960. Initially, I thought it was 1970 when they initiated it, but it was actually 1960 when they did put that stuff in. Okay, oleic acid is another one of those things that may help repair some of the damage that you're consuming that's damaging your colon. Consuming oleic acid inhibited the inflammatory cytokine TNFA watch, which is produced by fat cells in obese people and contributes to the metabolic syndrome. A diet high in oleic acid may reduce the inflammation seen in obesity and non-insulin dependent obesity. Oleic acid protects cell membranes from free radicals. Again, it helps clean up different things. It can help block bacteria, and it can help block even, fungal matter. Since oleic acid is less susceptible to oxidation damage than omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids, replacing these fatty acids with oleic protects your cell membrane from free radical and other oxidative stressors. Oleic acid is where you want to go. Higher brain levels of oleic acid associated with plasticity, extroversion, and openness. Those people who have a high concentration of oleic acid are more open, easier to get along with, or more positive, generally speaking, because of the way it works with the brain, keeping the brain very viable. So boys with higher concentration of oleic acid have more traits associated with plasticity. Plasticity is a positive personality trait associated with the extroversion, positive emotion, enthusiasm, sociability, assertiveness, and openness, imagination, intelligence, curiosity, creativity. So this is something everybody should be using. You should be giving this to your children to help, again, give them the advantage for brain development and personality developments, things that can help them, you know, in achieving, you know, what they need to do to be able to have, to be fully equipped mentally. A recent study found a 6.2% decline in oleic acids in the post-mortem brains of patients who had been suffering from major depressive disorders when compared to normal brains. So if those of you are suffering depression, instead of taking a pill, you might want to try oleic acid. I usually, for those people suffering depression, offer them the niacinamide form of B3. They take 5 a day or every 3 hours for the first month to get it in the system. And after about a month, they go down to about 3 a day, then about 2 a day, and maybe 1 a day as their body adapts with whatever they're dealing with and as they load up the B vitamins. Oleic acid supercharges your muscle and brain by making myelin. Myelin is a protective covering of sheet that twists around nerves, neurons, including nerves in the brain. Myelin is made of 70% fat, 30% protein. So again, myelin is vital for nerve functioning. It wraps around nerves and enables them to communicate effectively with each other. Okay, that's very important. The nerves, the cells, have to communicate with each other. When you are being given silica, nanosilica, because that's what they are, nanosilica gets caught in the blood, starts to assemble circuitry in the blood cells, and then seeks to allocate itself with other silica components in the body. And one of the things that silica does is shuts down the information that is being passed from cell to cell. So a lot of people are using the Dimatius Earth for their guts and whatnot to help clean out the system, and they find that they're getting some relief. It's because the intestinal tract is no longer able to communicate with the rest of the body because you may have shut it down. As a result, you may be feeling better, but at the expense of causing more damage. So again, this is something you might want to look at. And those of you who are interested in that research, I will send it to you. Send me an email, independs@yahoo.com. I've got it in a PDF. I'm just going to be able to figure out how to get the PDF to work on my website. Myelin insulates the nerves, prevents electrical current from leaking out of the axon. An axon is a nerve fiber that carries the action potential from a nerve to a body to a target. The increased speed of the action potential by over tenfold. In other words, the communication increases by a factor of 10. On myelinated axon conduction, velocities range from 0.5 to 10 milliseconds, while myelinated axons can reach up to speeds up to 150 milliseconds. That's quick. That's very quick. Action potentially basically, it jumps from node to node very quickly because of the connection. Myelin damage in the brain begins to lose function due to slow speeds of nerves, okay? Then information can get lost, stalled, or jumbled. You know how sometimes, you know, you're trying to think of a name or trying to think of something and you just can't seem to get the connection going? It takes you a while for the memory to dig back into that database in your head there to call the brain. And as it goes through the files, it starts to allocate the information, but it can take time. The older you are, this is going to be expected because all the things that you have learned in this life, the older you are, the more information you have stored in the brain. And as a result, the brain takes a little longer to go and access those cells or the folders, if you will, in regard to allocating that information. So this is one of the things that, again, can help some of you, especially those of you with maybe dementia issues, even the Parkinson's issues. This is something that you may want to consider using in order to help, again, sustain the communication levels with the cells so they're not shorting out. Parkinson's and dementia is usually a B12 deficiency in folic acid. And again, by using fermented cultured milk or fermented yogurt or even fermented cottage cheese is a type of ferment, you can ferment it. But if you make cottage cheese has glutamine in it that actually activates the B12 better than the bacteria in the gut. So these are things that you want to consider putting in together in combination when you're eating. You know, I always tell people, put some in your yogurt, let it sit out overnight. Let the yogurt making it more bioavailable for you. It breaks it down and actually can make more of it in the bacteria. So by using this, you're going to get a higher absorption rate because the bacteria will now get it through the stomach, down into the lower GI, where it's got to go through a high level of acidity. It'll survive that, and then the bacteria will activate in the colon, allowing you to be able to better utilize the B12. A lot of times when you're taking supplements, you lose 75% of whatever you're taking in the gut. So by using a medium like this, you can increase the uptake by up to 80 to 85%. So this is another inexpensive way. You can prepare, for instance, let's say you get a pound of yogurt. You can prepare a week's supply. You know, if you're using a liquid B12, take one or two droppers, put it in there, mix it up, mix it really well so that the thing will look pink. You can put your folic acid in there, you can put your B1 in there, you can put your B3 in there, niacinamide, you can put choline, inositol. These are all brain Bs, okay, brain B vitamins. Mixing them together, letting it sit on the counter overnight, and then using little portions of it every day, you are now going to be getting an adequate dose of whatever you're getting because of the uptake is going to be a lot higher. And again, you'll find that it will, over a period of time, you'll start seeing a lot of the mental changes that can occur. You can even mix this oleic acid in a yogurt. Matter of fact, because you can't take it straight because it's very, well, tough to take. So you might want to mix this with, again, a yogurt or a kefir or even in a smoothie. You know, if you're making protein shakes of some kind, you're using collagen and egg and you're mixing it together, and you add a little oleic acid, a little sunflower lecithin, you know, you've got lipids in there, you got acids, you got proteins, you know, you're on your way. You're on your way. The chronic disorder attacks, okay, yeah, that's the muscular sclerosis. Okay, this is another group of people that may want to consider using oleic acid. This is a chronic disorder attacking nerve myelin in the brain, spine, and eyes. It can result in loss of vision, paralysis, balance problems, cognitive dysfunction, chronic pain, and other symptoms. Oleic acid doesn't just synthesize myelin. It can also be used as a signaling molecule. Okay, look at that. So it can be used as a conductor. They reported that oleic acid regulates cholesterol and lipogenesis, in other words, fat burning, making fat in the brain of rats. Another animal study reported that a diet high in monounsaturated fats, including the oleic acid, reduces age-related changes in the brain's mitochondria. So again, another win-win. Brain mitochondria might be breaking down. This is where you might want to consider using a variety of different things that can increase mitochondria in the body. Manganese and zinc support the mitochondria in the system. The antioxidants, alpha-lipoic acid does as well. L-carnitine. You have a lot of different things that you can use to protect the mitochondria. And this is one of the things that you really have to start thinking in terms of your genes, your chromosomes, your ATP production, your enzymes, your mitochondria. These are very key, your genetic code, your DNA. These are key to sustain good health in these times today. We're not looking at the times of yesteryear. We're looking at today's times and what we're dealing with. When we're looking at health, the viability of health, it's all going to be contingent on how we deal with what we are currently facing. Okay, we're not looking at yesteryear's problems, because yesteryear's problems are yesteryear's, and there are remedies to treat cancers. Cancers have been all kinds of cures, and you're looking at stuff like this, acids that can actually cure cancer. Butyric acid takes cancer out. Propionic acid takes cancer out. Lactic acid takes cancer out. Wait till I read to you the effects of vinegar on cancer. And then they say there is no cure. Cancers can come in a variety of different placements in the body. All cancers are the same. Doesn't matter what they tell you, it's the same. The only difference between the cancers is the location. That's why they give it different titles. Lymphoma is a lymphatic cancer. Leukemia is a blood cancer. You know, you got your, you got intestinal cancers, pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer is, again, cancer of the pancreas. So whenever you're looking at cancer basically is an overload. And we've all been overloaded with nanoparticulates. I want to make a correlation with nano and cancer. Back in the 1960s, you know, when I was growing up at that time, again, I'm talking ancient history, at that time, cancer, you hardly heard of cancer until the 60s. And all of a sudden, there was an explosion of cancers. Now, looking back at that time frame, you know, living where I grew up, the regulations for pollution were non-existent, just like they are in China today. They finally made everyone put scrubbers in so that when the nanoparticles were coming out of the exhaust stacks from these factories and these industries, that the static filters would burn, literally cook these particulates, removing or reducing some of the toxicities that were coming out. It didn't clear it up. It just cut down on the emissions because it was burning it. Breaking it down a little bit further so it didn't pollute as heavy. It still was polluting. Then they added nanosilica to the food supply. And when you're looking at that, and you look at what they added it to, almost everything had it in it. All of a sudden, people were getting different cancers. Some were getting brain cancers because the silica would have translocated to the brain. Some were getting respiratory cancers, you know, because it is the silica dust. and it could have translocated either into the lungs or out of the lungs. Some were getting stomach cancers, some were getting esophageal cancers, and then again, soy was not the big deal then, and nobody was really eating soy at that time. Very few. I mean, the odd vegan or whatever, and they've always been a little funny about eating real food. So the issue was the nano, even at that time, it just was done a little bit differently. Today's nanoparticles, as opposed to yesterday's nanoparticles, have programming in them. You can write 1 terabyte on a nano bot or a nano piece. That's how advanced they have become in programming these things. They can send a nanobot into your body, supposedly, to help treat a condition. But any nanotechnology, quantum dots especially, are extremely lethal, cause a lot of cellular damage called ROS. So when you're looking at the effect of these things getting inside the body, they are designed to break you down. Those of you who have nano poisoning, i.e., they call more gallons, again, which is, again, my humble opinion, falsely labeled, you're having a lot of pain. You're feeling creepy, crawly things crawling through your system. You're not mentally there. You're depressed all the time. You're feeling weak. You're feeling like you're itching. You're feeling like you want to give up on life, because your system is being hit at such a high volume. Okay, when you're talking nanotechnology, you're talking high end volume, which is causing a lot of damage to the cells, and at the same time constructing its own network in your body using those proteins or biofilm that the body produces. Biofilm is a bacterial swarm that swarms over synthetics or any invading element that may come into your body. So as a result, you wind up producing a lot of biofilm, which will trap the nano. And some of you have seen pictures of the nano in a translucent material. That translucent material is your biofilm, and it produces a polymer. It has a protein sugar content. And what happens is the nanobots or the nanoparticles will assemble inside, creating fullerenes, which are long threads. Quantum dots may be in there as well, which will attach themselves to the fullerenes in its construct, and it will use that material to wrap itself up in to further extend itself, using the proteins in it to create the tube so that it has what they call a ligand, which attaches, the nanoparticles can now attach to in some sort of order in order to construct its tubes. The early research on it years ago is when they used to use nano, and they used to have gold and silver, and it would fire frequencies on it, nothing would happen. But the moment they put a ligand, which basically is just a simple binding agent, it could be fat, sugar, protein, whatever, the gold particles lined up on top and the silver particles lined up on the bottom in singularity, one under the other. Then when they contorted the frequencies, they were able to make this thing take shape. So a lot of you have this going on inside of you. So this is where using saturated fats, using things like oleic acid to help again with maintaining brain functionality, clarity of thought, to get to a point where you reduce the load, you have to try to follow the procedures that we've given on my website at augmentandforce.com. There is a recipe for a YouTube link. You may want to investigate it. In there we've got the nano bucket. We've got nano solutions. This is something that you can utilize. You can also go with the video where we show you how to make the nano triangle. These will go a long way in stripping this down, getting the right things inside of you. Whatever you strip out, you've got to replace. And the biggest foods that most of you should be consuming today are fermented foods, fermented dairy especially. The concept of them giving you the evils of dairy is beyond belief incredible. One of the things that you see with dairy, it has 25% oleic acid. So this is a brain food, okay, a brain food. When you hear people make the ridiculous comment that we're the only people in the world that eat milk, no other species does, so what? Not every species feeds on animals either. Giraffes don't go feeding on animals. Elephants don't go feeding on animals. Yet people shoot them and eat them. You know, so what are you saying? It is a food. It is the superfood next to egg. Egg and milk are the superfoods you should be consuming. Pound for pound, ounce for ounce, you know, inch for inch, they offer more nutrition than just about any other food out there. You know, they're brain food, they're hormonal food, they're muscle food, they're skeletal food, they're organ food, they're immune food. You know, they supply the immune system. So anything that they're telling you in regard to this, I'll give you an example. Back in the 1930s, 1939, they were using unpasteurized milk to treat tuberculosis. Within 6 weeks, tuberculosis was cured just by using milk. Just by using milk. Now, tuberculosis can also be cured with vinegar. I will get to that. Ooh, vinegar. Vinegar is a very powerful healing agent. And I'm not talking apple cider vinegar, so you don't go running the store and buying the apple cider vinegar. You don't need to. The white vinegar you find at the grocery store has just as much healing properties as the stuff at the health food store. And it's cheaper and it goes a long ways. You can wash your body with it. You can wash wounds with it. You can, people with diabetes who have the sores on the bottom of their feet, where open sores, they have used vinegar on those sores, and nothing medically will seal those sores except vinegar. Vinegar does a good job with it. So this is something you may want to look at, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay, oleic acid restored the heart's ability to properly use and store fats for fuel. Can you imagine that? This is all coming from an acid. So when we're looking at it, one of the most common fats is in human breast milk. It makes up 25% of fat in cow's milk. It's monounsaturated. It's an omega-9 fatty acid. It's also used in the cosmetic industry. And it may be responsible for most of the health benefits of olive oil. So if you can find, you can go on eBay, you can, you know, start looking up at chemical companies that may supply the oleic acid. You may be surprised at, you know, what you might find and results you may use. And if you're going to start off with it, I would probably start off with a half a teaspoon to a teaspoon. Mix it with something. Don't take it straight. It doesn't taste that good. But if you cut it with, like I say, a dairy product, if you cut it with, you can probably put it in a, on top of some of your foods, even on your animal proteins that you might be consuming, or mix it in with some of the fats that you're using, like butter or coconut oil, ghee, MCT oil, cocoa butter, lanolin, tallow, lard. These are fats that you should be using to, again, to sustain and maintain healthy integrity, to help, again, maintain your hormonal balance, because you need those fats for hormones. You need those fats for cellular integrity and cellular solidarity. When you're dealing with the issues we're dealing with today, a lot of the autoimmune issues are a direct result of an overloading of the system, and the system is unable to repair itself properly because of the overload. Some of these things can help actually expunge the overload that is in there and help regenerate what was damaged. So this is something that, again, you can look at, some of the things that you can investigate for yourself, so that you're not, you know, chasing the wind, not, you know, listening to some of the things that some of these people are saying, you know, because, again, it's some of the stuff that they're saying majority of the time is because they're trying to sell you something. Nobody here is trying to sell you anything. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm trying to show you what to do. You know, if you want to support, that's fine. But again, the whole thing here is to show you what to do, point you in a direction so you can start looking for this information for yourself. And again, this may help a lot of you in regard to finding solutions for some health issues that have been lingering for a long, long, long time. Some of you have heard, let's change it up just a wee bit, give you a little bit of a break from doing acid. I know we're going to be doing acid now, right? Acid, man. Here we go. Okay, you heard a couple weeks ago, this was the initial story that came out. CIA purchased Whole Foods for $13.7 billion. That was the initial story that came out June 22nd, 2017, written by Sheen et al. Tabatai. Okay, I said it badly, but anyway. The CIA purchased Whole Foods, the so-called premier retailer of the natural foods in America, for $13.6 billion. Think you're going to get hijacked there in the food supply? Do you think they might put something in the organics now? The CIA. But then, Amazon boss Jeff Bezos, who recently purchased the Washington Post and who works directly with the CIA, acquired Whole Foods. Then a couple of days later, it stated Amazon bought it. Now, isn't that interesting? Amazon bought Whole Foods. So what's that going to say about Amazon? Amazon, you know, is just business for them. What's that going to say about people who shop at Whole Foods? You know, so again, and the nonsense they put here, this is so funny. Whole Foods is part of a move to help the deep state understand the health-conscious consumers. CIA has been murdering people for ages. You know, when did they care about the health of consumers? This is another means, again, to hijack the health foods, some of the supplements maybe, and again, changing the whole way things are done. So again, you have to, you know, again, smell the coffee. You have to start looking at what's going on. You better pay attention to things like this. You know, not everything is what it appears to be. So again, when you're looking at the stuff versus CIA then Amazon, you know, it's basically trying to diffuse the error they made. But when you're looking at what's required, what needs to be done, you know, and you're seeing that your sources are being, you know, dubious in their exposure, you may want to again come up with an alternative, because it's not necessarily a good thing. All right, I'm going to change it again. We're going to go into glutamine as an eczema connection. They found that Nature Genetics on June 19th, they found that people had high levels of eczema. Now, eczema basically is a high concentration of toxins in the skin, which the skin is unable to pull out or move out. And so as a result, there's a lot of damage that can occur. So mutations can happen. So when you're looking at all that we're exposed to in the atmosphere, the nanoparticles coming down, a lot of you are having contact exposure just with the pollutants and the chemtrails, causing these issues. I mean, you've got to remember, you got titanium dioxide coming down on you, you got aluminum coming down on you, you've got barium coming down on you, you've got silver coming down, nano silver, you got cadmium coming down on you, you know, and the list goes on and on. So when you start thinking about the metals that are coming down on you, and there are components up there that we don't know that's coming down on you, you know, even the solvents are coming in there with mixing with the chemtrails. So you don't know. So as a result, when it hits the skin with the way it's mixed together, it causes this kind of damage. So one of the things that you can use is glutamine. Okay, and a cheap source of it is cottage cheese. So by the pound, start consuming it. And again, another thing you can do topically is apply peanut oil. Peanut oil has another acid called arachidonic acid, which actually helps cleanse the skin. It actually helps with the skin's ability to remove toxins and toxic waste. You can massage that in and allow it to do its thing. The whole element here now is to flush the stuff out of the skin. So this is another way of doing it. Any saturated fat you consume will also help repair cellular integrity that might be the result of the damage. Do not eat any canola oil whatsoever, because this will further exacerbate and damage that connection. Do not eat flaxseed oil or any fish oils. The flax oils, number one, are highly estrogenic to the male populace. You are already being castrated as it is, what they're dumping on you. When you're talking silver, nano silver coming down on you, you're talking cadmium coming down on you, titanium dioxide coming down on you, this is basically castrating the male population. If you ever want to look at the research on titanium dioxide and nanosilver on the testicular fortitude of the male population, you will find it is the most lethal thing to be exposed to if you're a male, provided you want to maintain and sustain your testicles. So when you're looking at, and then cadmium also destroys the testicles and it flushes the selenium out, leaving you wide open for cancer. The titanium dioxide and the nanosilver literally shred the tubes inside the sac that carry the seed. So a lot of you can't get erected, not because you're low in testosterone, and that could be a result as well. But you're also low because if your testicles are damaged, then you can't produce the lady egg cells that require for testosterone production. So this is what is going on with a lot of you, and this is why you're having the issues you have. So keep that in mind when I'm telling you no canola oil. One of the things that omega-3s do is they damage the myelin. They actually break it down. Anything that's going to cause this is not something you want to use. And fish oils. 16 countries have tested fish oils, and I've never found one that hadn't been oxidized or contaminated, contrary to what's written on the label. They all have some form of mercury, traces amounts of mercury. They all have lead in them, and they all have arsenic. So the only way they could have gotten arsenic and lead in them is being exposed to industrial waste. For instance, let's say they caught the fish off the coast of China or India or some parts of Europe or maybe along South America or even heavily polluted areas off the coast of the United States or Canada. Those fish would have accumulated the lead, the arsenic, and any other industrial metal, chromium and other things, that would be embedded in their tissues as well. So again, the oils that they're expressing out, usually out of the liver and other parts of the body, is going to have that in it. Okay, the fats in the system will, again, help expunge this out of these animals, just like fats will help expunge things out of us. So again, this can show up in the skin, and canola oil can damage not only cellular integrity, but the integrity of the skin itself. So do not use these things. Omega-3s cannot be cooked above 104 degrees. They wind up going carcinogenic very quickly. They oxidize extremely fast. And canola oil is an omega-3. So by cooking with this, basically you're just shooting yourself in the foot. You're better off using the saturated fats or omega-6 oils, even some omega-9s, like avocado oil, a real olive oil, not a counterfeit, pumpkin seed oil, macadamia nut oil. These are all omega-9s. And they will have the oleic acids in them at different levels, and they'll have other healing properties as well. So again, and mix up your fats. One of the ways to maintain healthy fats in the body is by mixing them up. You know, have some saturated fats, have some omega-6s, have some 9s. You know, some of the 6s will have 3s in them, but in a very low amount. Almost every fat out there has some omega-3 in it. Coconut oil has like a 1% omega-3. Basically, it's just enough to give it fluidity for the coconut oil to pour or move. That's about it, you know. So even in nature, there's only very few plants have high levels of omega-3. Canola is one. Perella plant is another one. Flax is another one. There's another plant, your chia seeds, of course. And there's a plant that purslane. Purslane is another one. So these are all high in omega-3s, but again, you know, not something that I would suggest you use the omega-3s. In its state, in its complete state, it's a little different story. You're not going to overload on it. I mean, you'd be getting very nominal amounts of it in its original state. If you're pouring it by the teaspoon or tablespoon, you're going to be super loaded with it. So again, even normally, it's not something that is consumed in high concentrations naturally. So again, this is not something you want to do. Omega-6s and omega-9s help repair the skin. I'll give you a true story. I had a guy with a bad case of eczema. He had it ever since he was a child. It was on his face, it was on his legs, his arms, it was all over the place. And so I got him on evening primrose oil, which is an omega-6. I had him use the encapsulations at the time, and he was doing 9 of those a day. I told him to do it for about a month, and he did it for 6. And when we saw him 8 months later, he was brand spanking new. No marks on him at all, whatsoever. He said the doctors couldn't do anything for him, and that's what did it for him. So again, you know, here is omega-6. So all the hyperbole that they put out there in these threes, it was basically to sell waste byproduct, fish oil waste, to the general population. And that's what the health food industry has been doing probably for the last 50 or 60 years. You know, initially they sold molasses, okay? Molasses is sludge. If you ever look at molasses and where it's coming from, basically you're eating the crap left over from the cane or the beet. It's nothing but pure sludge. Then when you're looking at your fish oils, this is another one. Soy was another thing they threw in there. You know, they used to sell canola oil. They used to promote that pretty heavily. Then they started selling aspartame and neotame and all these other. So there's the health food industry is not what it's cracked up to being. It's not healthy. So it's up. The onus is up to you, because nobody in there is going to tell you, well, there's this excipient in this that might cause you cancer. There's this excipient in this that might actually translocate throughout your body and attach itself to your skeletal structure. That's one of the things that silica does. For those of you who have skeletal issues going on, restless leg or fibromyalgia, that's because the silica content has basically gone right to the bone. And once it gets to the bone, it attaches itself to the bone, producing an autoimmune response. Now, how do you get this out? Well, one of the things that will get it out is sodium thiosulfate. It's one of the things that can pull this kind of thing out of you. And again, if you use the sodium thiosulfate, you must load up on minerals daily. You must load up on fermented dairy daily, because you got to put back the healthy bacteria. You might want to incorporate the oleic acid we just talked about. You might want to consider using the saturated fats to help regenerate and repair the cellular integrity as well. Because you got to repair all the damage that this stuff has been doing. And this has been doing it since 1960. So it doesn't matter how old you are. Everybody's been exposed to this. When you're looking at people after 1986, this is when they've done away with the food safety. And this is when a lot of free trade things started happening in the works, so that they started bringing things into the country that they had banned 30 or 40 years ago. So what is that telling you? In Canada, we have tomatoes made in Canada that come from Mexico. So I have to assume when I read something like that Mexico and Canada are now one country. And either Mexico is another province of Canada, or Canada is a state of Mexico. So this is what I think these days, because when I see a sign saying made in Canada and they come from Mexico, what's that saying? That's saying integrity, right? Ethics. I'm nothing against buying tomatoes from Mexico, but if you're going to tell me it's something coming from Canada, then it should be coming from Canada. If it's coming from the United States, it should be coming from the United States. But what's happening is some things are being imported from other countries, and then they are put in different containers and then relabeled. And this is going on daily all over the place. So again, let's get back to the skin. Again, glutamine is another one that you might want to use. It can help. Another thing they found also that helps with eczema is nitric oxide. Well, you can make nitric oxide just by using arginine, okay? You can eat walnuts, you can eat, there's pecans. There's some nuts that produce a higher concentration of nitric oxide. I believe peanuts is another one. And again, to reduce the aflatoxins in peanuts, use chlorophyll. Okay, if you're eating peanuts, take a shot of chlorophyll before you eat and a shot afterwards. If there is any aflatoxins, they found that the copper in the chlorophyll wipes out the aflatoxin. So again, this is something that you can give your kids before you feed them peanuts. And don't give them the sugar-coated peanuts, the peanut brittle, or any of that other nonsense. You give them real food, real things. Don't addict them to sugar at a young age, because by the time they get old enough to realize that they got a problem, they are now addicted. So anyway, nitric oxide is released in the skin after exposure to sunlight, and this molecule can help reduce the inflammation. So one of the things you may want to consider getting is a solar halogen bulb. Go to your local pet shop. When you go to a local pet shop, look for the non-heated halogen lights that they use for reptiles. Basically puts out the full spectrum of the sun. Sit in front of it daily, because the frequencies we're getting from the sun, that we should be getting from the sun, is no longer coming through, because they're blocking those frequencies with these chemtrails. So a lot of you are going out in the sun and getting damaged because you're not getting the full frequency of the sun. And a lot of you are taking a lot of this vitamin D. Well, that vitamin D works with the sun. So if you're taking vitamin D and you're not getting adequate sunlight, you could actually be looking at causing heart failure. Because one of the things that vitamin D does, it can increase calcified stones in the heart if you take too much. So again, you know, get those lights. Those lights will go a long way as far as healing, because they're on from the infrared to the ultraviolet spectrum. And again, they're not expensive. They last a fairly decent amount. I would probably stockpile them. Now that I told you, I'm going to probably have to go buy more. But anyway, this is some of the things that you can use to encourage your healing of the skin. So again, if the sunlight can produce nitric oxide, you should be able to do the same thing. And if you want to increase the nitric oxide production, you may want to use things like arginine or ornithine. Ornithine is another amino acid. It's a byproduct of arginine, and it has also been used for healing skin disorders, you know, especially for people who are victims of fire. They use ornithine quite a bit in order to help regenerate and repair the damage from burns. It also has been used in the past, I believe, also for eczema, psoriasis, and a whole host of other skin disorders. So this is another thing that you can utilize, again, to help you on your way to maybe fully recover. Alrighty, so we got it down fact. You know, it's we're ready to go. A lot of times what they're doing is they're giving you hydrocortisone, which again reduces the inflammation. You know, antihistamines to block any of the itching, because once the antihistamine comes, the blood will surface and then causes it stimulates the area for you to scratch. This is some of the things, again, that you can do to, again, minimize this effect. You know, use the oils, use the peanut oil. You know, even if you put a little moisture on the skin first and then rub the oil in, the oil will help trap the moisture on the skin as well. Even if you buy evening primrose oil, again, if you buy it in capsule, puncture the capsule, you take out the oil, rub it on the skin, and then do the same thing when you're swallowing it, puncture the capsule, squeeze the oil out, either put it in a yogurt or a cottage cheese or a kefir or even regular unpasteurized milk products, or put on a piece of cheese, and away you go. And now you have it, you've got a combination of things happening. All right, I'm going to talk about silver, and I'm going to blow the door open on a lot of the myths and the mythos of silver. Some of you are going to be really surprised with this report. Some of you aren't. This report, I did this research on it, and this research, when I did it on the toxicity of silver is what I wanted. I think I got the wrong report. Give me one second. I got the wrong report. It doesn't matter. I know the report. I read it last night. When they started doing the research on silver back in the 60s and 70s, 80s, whatever, we're comparing silver nanoparticles to ionic silver. But the ionic silver was bound with either nitrates, nitric oxide, or chlorides, or vinegar, acetic acid. They were extracting it in either acetic acid, nitric oxide, or chloride, salt. So when they did the research initially, They were showing that the ionic silvers were far more dangerous and they permeated more than the nano did. But over a period of 20 years, when they started looking at silver nanoparticles, they recognized that those particles, that form of silver, was even more lethal than the ionic. So the damage that these silver products can cause, if you're using them on a regular basis, it can disrupt your hormones, it can disrupt your chromosomes. Again, for the males, it can wipe out your testicles, your testosterone levels, because again, the damaged particulates. It can bring on high levels of oxidative stress in the body. It can get lodged in the liver, it can cause liver damage, spinal damage, brain damage, because once it gets into the brain, it'll start to oxidize. When it's on it didn't matter really whether it was ionic or nano, even the silver solutions, that's another form of ionic. You know, it's basically using a charge to make that too. These products can cause problems. I had a woman contact me after I did a show 1 month. The same day I did the show, she contacted me for a consultation. And she had told me she had bought a product. I won't give the name. I'll just call it SS. Okay, SS. So you can let your minds wander. This particular silver had a protein-bound nature to it. So, because according to the research, if you bind nanoparticles with protein, it mitigates the uptake in the environment. Okay, mitigate and stop are two different things. So, when you're looking at mitigation, basically, let's say you got a nano silver that you're peeing out of your body, okay, if it doesn't get lodged in. Now, that silver that you just pissed is going to go into the sewage system and down into the waterways and byways of the waterways. So now they bound it with a protein. Well, let's say you pissed out, 100 nanometers of nano silver. So instead of the full 100 nanometers getting into the soil, you're getting maybe about 80, 85. So you're getting 85 nanometers out of the 15. That's still a high margin of polluting the soil. Keep that in mind, because this is what they're not telling you. These silver products should be used sparingly. Again, back in my day, you only used silver if it was the last resort. Now, in Europe, back again in history, they would collect the rainwater, and in the Catholic community, from what I was told, they would put a silver cross in the water supply that would sit there for a week. Then what they would do is they would take the water and distribute it out to the parishioners, and that would last them the whole year. So the amount of silver that was in there would have been anywhere between 3 and 5 parts per million, not parts per billion. When you're talking nano silver, you are talking in parts per billion. And the lethality of that silver, just like the ionic, according to the research, is how they saturate the cell. When the particle size is on a micron level, what happens is, and they said this in the report, they didn't see any difference between the nano silver or the ionic silver. They said it was the ions that caused the damage in both cases. So when you're looking at that and you understand this, okay, the bigger the particle, if it's on a micron level, it just attaches itself to the myelin, releases a discharge, and then it moves on. It's too big to translocate, so now the body has a means of grabbing it and pulling it out the door. Now, if you are going to use silver products, the theme used to be, use it 3 to 5 days and you get off of it. And then you start using things like high levels of vitamin A, saturated fat, vitamin E, to these type of fats in order to help flush and collect the silver that you may still be in the system. That's the way it used to be. That's how they used to do it. Okay, they got everybody buying these devices, and you're making nano silver, and you don't realize you're making nano silver, and so as a result, you're going to get a high level of penetration in the cells, causing damage. You may not feel it initially, but over a period of time, you will. The argyria that they're talking about is a grayish blue color that you get, or more of a grayish color. So when you looked at the Smurf, that boy was blue. He was using spoons that had a copper base to them. And he was drinking it by the glass. Again, this is insanity. Back in the day, you only needed a very little amount of this. Teaspoons, all you needed. So again, there's foolishness and stupidity on some of this stuff. Some of these things are extremely powerful agents. You got iodine, for instance, extremely powerful, and you're only using drop amounts. You got selenium is another powerful metal that helps heal the body and fight cancer. Again, you're using minutia amounts, up to 5 milligram consumption. You got zinc, it's another mineral that has very high effectiveness, but it can be toxic if you take too much. One of the things that's coming down on us from the sky is also zinc oxide, and it's on a nanoscale. So when you're talking nano metals, ionic metals, there's not that much difference according to the research. Again, anybody interested in the research on the nano silver, please let me know. I'll forward you the email. You can forward the report to you so you can take a look at it. Now, I did state on here, the very top, that's the comment on the top is mine, that the research that was done wasn't done totally accurately either. If they had just ionized the silver without nothing else, no nitric acid, chloride, no salt, no acetic acid, just a straight ionic silver, they probably would have found that it wouldn't have had as much, could have caused as much damage, or would have may not have caused the amount of damage because the particulate size would have been bigger. But anyway, and you wouldn't have had the transport mechanism to expedite this into either the tissues or the cells or into the blood. Now, I may use a silver nitrite if I have a cancer in the blood. Again, I'm not going to use it all the time, maybe one or two applications. And I would use other things like grapeseed or black seed in order to help to deal with leukemia-type cancers. But again, this is something that you use extremely sparingly. So when you're looking at the research that I put out there on this very topic, you will find that, like I said, I put on there right at the top that the research that was done wasn't done accurately, number one. And number two, the other thing I said on there is over a period of decades, you could see there was a transition from the lethality of nano silver as opposed to ionic silver because they started doing more research with it. And they began to understand how nano silver caused huge levels of had a disruptive influence on the environment. That's one of the things they're spraying in the fields right now in order to kill insects. Speaking of which, I have friends of mine live out in the county, and they called me up yesterday to let me know that they got a greenhouse, and every year they've always had to go into the greenhouse, remove moss and insects that got in there. And they were trying to get out. And she said this year they haven't seen one bug, not one. And it could be because they've been spraying the fields with the nano silver and it's been wiping out the insect population, which is required for a healthy crop. Bees are not the only insects that make food or help us eat, allow us to eat. Other bugs, they show you, there's a picture out there. They show you a field, and again, we're talking 1950s, 1960s here, where they didn't have glyphosates or any kind of genetic engineering of any kind, and you've seen that the ground was full of about a couple thousand different species of bugs, different species. And they were all working the soil. Some were cleaning up debris, some were digging things, some were burying things, some were eating the dead plants, some were chewing on the weeds. They all had a role that they were doing in order to encourage healthy crops or healthy field. Okay, now they showed you another picture after they sprayed glyphosates on the field, where you had thousands of bugs with different species, you just had different species with about a half a dozen bugs that survived it. And the insects were half the size that the initial bugs used to be and barely existing. So when we're looking at, you know, silver being sprayed in the fields, it is basically extremely detrimental to the environment, and it can create a, again, this kind of situation. Silver, okay, DNA nanotubes were decorated by silver clusters with DNA program color. What they did basically is they inserted they designed the DNA to work with the silver, because again, the silver would oxidize things, because that's what it does in breaking things down on a nano scale. So it took them some work to help them keep their desired structure. It has shown that not only can the breadboard keep its shape and silver clusters are present, it can also position an array of many hundreds of clusters containing identical numbers of silver atoms. In order to make a photonic array using self-assembly process, in other words, the silver built the device but through a programming. You have to be able to program the positions of the clusters you're putting in the array. Okay, this is a very key thing, self-assembly. These things operate on a program, and they can assemble. They assemble in us. They assemble in livestock. They assemble in the aquatics. They're assembling in birds. I'm still trying to figure out how God is keeping the sparrows alive, because they're exposed 100%. You know, I have noticed that the sparrows are getting leaner, so I'm not sure what's going on there. Anyway, researchers engineered a piece of DNA with two parts, one that wraps around the cluster and the other attaches to the DNA nanotube, which is the silver. Sticking out of the nanotubes are short DNA strands that act as docking stations for the silver cluster's host strands. When you start pulling this stuff out of your body and you start looking under a scope, you will see a very similar thing. You'll see clusters of different components. You'll see things extending out of those clusters. You'll see things extending out of the dendromeres that are forming. It'll wrap itself up in your fats, for instance, and then as a result, it will use the proteins and the fats to assemble and to again build whatever it's going to build in its network. And they're showing you that they can do it. This is something that, again, a lot of you need to understand when you read this about this information about this technology, how it can have a lot of side effects. And it's not the safest thing. They're going to promote, like I said to you, they will be promoting that this is going to save you with people from cancers. It's going to help heal the body. It's going to be used for humanitarian purposes. This has always been the case for the last 60 years. You've heard that this is going to be for the benefit of humanity. It's going to protect us. It's going to make us healthier. It's going to make us better. It's going to improve our way of life. Okay. These are the terms they use to catch phrases to keep you in that state of hope, the state of being naive. So because you don't, once you've been disarmed, you're no longer going to challenge the status quo on something coming out that may be dangerous. So again, this is something for your benefit that you should again pay attention to, because it's what it is. It's coming to that point where there is no ethical value anymore. You know, forget it. They're just, that doesn't exist. When you're looking at some of the things that have been going on, you know, it's extremely, like I said, crazy, just totally crazy. There is no anything anymore in regard to safety. You know, you're basically on your own. You can go buy the packaging, or you may want to start contacting companies that you're buying stuff from, get the scoop. I went today to look for a protein powder. You think you could buy a protein powder, which is either a straight whey, a whey isolate, a whey hydrolate, or just even a whey concentrate without them adding soy or adding fiber material or adding whatever. You got these guys putting these fibrous materials like inulin and some other fibers. This stuff can actually bind with those proteins and you can lose the value of those proteins. So, and when they put that stuff in, they're charging you top dollar for a material that's been compromised with other things. You're not buying a pure whey product. And some of them are still being loaded with soy lecithin. This is insanity. You know, I remember when I was growing up and I used to get into trading, training, there had all kinds of companies back then that you could buy just a simple whey protein without any sweeteners, without anything. That would be nice to see again. I make my own whey. Usually when I buy milk, the milk I use, I'll put it in the pot. I'll put in enzyme combination in there. I will then add a little salt to it, not much. And then I will proceed to bring it to a simmer, a good high simmer. Let it simmer for about 5 or 10 minutes, shut it off, and let it cool overnight. The next day I drain it, and I get my either my cream cheese or my cottage cheese out of that, which gives me approximately 28 grams of protein per 100 gram. That's not bad. For 100 grams, it's 3 ounces. 1 ounce of that ricotta is going to give me almost 30 grams of protein or 28 grams of protein. That's quite a bit since the body will utilize just about all of it. You know, if you add, again, hydrochloric acid with it, you're going to increase its absorption. Even if you add a little vinegar to it, you're going to increase its absorption. So when you're looking at the things that are happening today, I mean, these are some of the things you can make yourself. Get to make sure if you're going to make it yourself. I'll give you what I do. I buy a whole milk, full fat. I may even add cream to it if I don't think there's enough fat in it. I'll add, like I said, probably a tablespoon of a enzyme because I'm putting in 2 to 3 liters, which is about 2 to 3 quarts for those in the U.S. And then I'm adding the enzymes. I'm putting it on at the very beginning, mixing it up. I add just a pinch of salt to it, and that's how I do it. And what happens is there are times when you'll see when you do that, the enzymes you can see break down those proteins very, very easily, and they just come undone. You heat it up for a bit, and then the next day you just filter it out, pour it through, have a strainer where you can put a bowl underneath there. You collect that leftover. That water material is whey. That's the whey. Okay. That whey, okay, it's not, that one doesn't have a high amount of protein in it, but it does have a little, but it does have a higher concentration of minerals and vitamins in it. See, this is the part of milk that gives you the nutritional part of it. The other part of it gives you the protein and the fat. You know, when you do this, you lose the vitamin C. I mean, basically, the only way you're going to get vitamin C in milk is you buy it from an unpasteurized cow. Cow has to be, or cow's milk from an unpasteurized cow. So that didn't still come out right. Unpasteurized milk from a grass-fed cow. If you can get that, you're going to have about 250 milligrams of vitamin C per glass that you drink. So this is, again, loaded with antioxidants. It's loaded with good fats. It's got your vitamin D in it already. It's got your vitamin A in it already. It's got, again, a full complement of proteins in it. You know, all your vitamins are in there. So you can't go wrong. When you try to get it from an unpasteurized or a grass-fed source, get it unpasteurized, pound for pound, it is one of the most healthiest foods on the planet. And let me take this to another level for those people who are still making these stupid comments about, you know, people shouldn't be drinking milk. The monarchy in England use unpasteurized milk. They got their own cows that looks after them and sustains them. So if the royal family is consuming this, those of you under the Commonwealth, then it's good enough for her, it's good enough for us. So again, don't allow these morons to misguide you with their opinions. I always tell everybody, opinions are like backsides. Everybody's got one. So don't be swayed. All right, I'm going to talk now about vinegar. This one blew me away. Acetic acid or vinegar has been used sporadically in medicine for 6,000 years. It being successfully implemented, it treated the plague, ear, chest, urinary tract infections, and in the elimination of Bacillus pyocyanus, now Pseudomonas aeruginosa, from war wounds. Further reports using that it was used as the elimination of bacteria from fresh produce. In our burn center, a concentration of 2.5% to treat patients with burn wounds infected or heavily colonized with P. aeruginosa. Here's a topical use for it. Those of you who have the nano poisoning, mix a little bit of salt with it and then start applying it to the areas, especially where you have open sores. It will then penetrate into the sores with the salt. The salt will help displace it. The acid will help, again, break down some of that protein which this stuff is bound with. And you may be surprised how quick the wounds will start to heal. Pseudomonas aeruginosa is a classic opportunistic pathogen with innate resistance to many antibiotics and disinfectants. It is ubiquitous in hospital environment. So when you go to the hospital, there's a good chance you may wind up with this pathogen. Okay, because of its ability to survive in a hospital environment. Isn't that interesting? They also found that it also can be dealt with a 3% acetic acid solution. But all of them were found to be inhibited. This is what they found when they did the test. All of them were found to be inhibited by 3% acetic acid in vitro when exposed for 15 minutes or more. Topical application of 3 to 5% acetic to wounds for 2 to 12 times successfully eliminated P. aeruginosa from wounds. Even the medical people's antibiotics cannot remove this stuff, but vinegar does. Vinegar does. It's also microbial, so it can help wipe that out. The study done at 1 to 5% acetic acid was determined in nutrient broth by adding 100 milliliters of overnight broth culture of the P. aeruginosa to equal volume of each concentration. This is how they tested to see if it would take it out. Concentration of acetic acid in a separate test tube and subcultures from these were made on Pseudomonas isolation on agar. After 15, 25, 20, and 25 minutes exposure, they were incubated for 18 hours at 37 Celsius, about 100 degrees or thereabouts. 3% acetic acid, 5% in the case of drained peripheric abscesses, which was not responding to antibiotic therapy for 28 days, and repeated yielding P. aeruginosa on culture resistance to 15 different antimicrobial agents. No antibiotics were given to the patients during the course of the management. This is what they used to clean it. They applied basically a gauze, they irrigated it with it, they washed it, they cleaned out the wounds daily. Again, all of them were inhibited by 3% acetic acid for 15 minutes. It stopped it. It's incredible. Now, I was looking at another report about the use of acetic acid for a top region for treating pseudomonal infections, or superficial infections and burns for diabetics. A lot of diabetics didn't realize that they had these sores at the bottom of their feet. This is because of the damage that the sugar does to the tissues along the way. One of the things they found is antibiotic they've used for people with diabetes, nothing worked till they applied vinegar on the wounds and cleaned the wounds. They found that after about 12 applications for people with abscess and foot ulcer, each case, they found it cleared it up. 2 to 12 applications, depending on the level of intensity with the material. So when you're looking at some of this stuff, this is another thing for those of you who are diabetic who've got sores at the bottom of the feet, you may want to apply vinegar on there. Again, 3% or 5%. 5% is what you buy at the grocery store, and that's what they use, same kind of stuff. So It's concluded that as 3% acetic acid is non-toxic, inexpensive, and efficient topical agent for the effective elimination of P. aeruginosa from superficial infection sites. There you go. Now, the other thing that vinegar is good for is tuberculosis. I was blown away by that. Usually, I get people iodine for that, but this, I think, would even beat iodine. I'd probably combine the two together because of the way they work, or combine iodine with turpentine, because these three things knock out TB. It's an effective and economical mycobactericidal to kill both mycobacterium tuberculosis and M. tuberculosis mycobacteria. Propionic acid is another one, which I'll talk about in the future. This one's another very key, important acid that's required to maintain a healthy colon. Without these acids in the colon, you lose. You will have cancers, you'll have tumors, you'll have all kinds of issues going on. And a lot of the damage in the colon today, like I stated, is not only from the grains, but also from the nanoparticulates that they mixed in the grains, and the smart dust that would have also been accumulated in the food supply. We found that acetic acid vinegar efficiently kills M. tuberculosis after 30 minutes of exposure to a 6% acetic acid solution. So 5% may take a little bit longer, may take maybe 40 minutes. Acetic acid is an effective mycobactericidal disinfectant. It should also be active against most other bacteria, and usually it is. Mycobacteria are best known for the causing of tuberculosis and leprosy, but infections with non-tuberculosis mycobacteria are an increasing problem for surgical or cosmetic procedures in the lungs of cystic fibrosis and immunosuppressed patients. Killing mycobacteria is important because mycobacterium tuberculosis strains can be multi-drug resistant, therefore potentially fatal biohazards, and environmental mycobacteria must be thoroughly eliminated from surgical implements and respiratory equipment. We fortuitously found that acetic acid kills mycobacteria, and that showed that it's an effective mycobactericidal agent. So again, it's also works against very resistant, clinical important mycobacterium abscess complex. So, you know, there you have it. Again, even for ulcerative colitis. Now, if you are going to be using these acids, you definitely have to change the diet. Even those of you with diabetes, if you've got diabetes, sugar is not in your diet. Neither are these grains. Neither are canola oil, because they will further cause either glycation damage, cellular damage, tissue damage as a result of putting this stuff in your system. If you've already been compromised, then basically you're going to basically shut yourself down by taking these stuff in. They found that vinegar could also help fight ulcerative colitis and inflammatory bowel disease, IBD. Research is related to gut microbiome. They found that vinegar suppressed inflammation-inducing proteins while improving the gut's bacterial makeup in mice. Now, again, what it would be doing in the colon would be breaking down undigested proteins, making them broken down so they wouldn't further cause any inflammatory issues going on. People with the conditions experience repeated inflammation by large intestinal lining, which can cause ulcers, abdominal pain, diarrhea, and other symptoms. At least one study suggests that vinegar, which has been used in traditional medicine for centuries, might be effective against ulcerative colitis. They were looking at it. They showed treated animals had high levels of bacteria such as lactobacillus and bifidobacteria. When they had this, they didn't have these issues as much. Treatment also lowered the levels of proteins that induce potentially damaging inflammation in the gut. It's one of those acids that you can use to help break down protein as well. Acetic acid induces cell death in human gastric cancer, stomach cancers, intestinal cancers, and mesothelioma cell lines. Acetic acid is capable of preventing the planktonic and biofilm growth of all 29 isolates. at dilutions at 0.31%. Now, isn't that interesting? You don't need a lot. With the majority of biofilm eradicated at less than 1.25% acetic acid. That's incredible. Another cheap and inexpensive way to take out biofilm is vinegar. And we're talking white vinegar, not talking apple cider vinegar. All vinegars have benefit. Wine vinegar has benefit. Rice vinegar has benefit. Berry vinegar has benefit. Pineapple vinegar. You know, you've got vinegars from all over. Balsamic, they all have a benefit. Okay? Don't let them, again, fool you with this. Reported that topical application of acetic acid promptly caused tumor necrosis in a mouse model of a gastric cancer. Basically, they added acetic acid was added into cell culture, different concentrations for different time periods. This is how they got it to see if it would work. Results, acetic acid promptly induced the cell death of RGM-1, RGK-2 cells, and KATO3 cells in concentration-dependent manner. From 0.1%, that's next to nothing. Basically you'd be putting the 20 ounces of distilled water to 1 teaspoon of the vinegar to get a 1% solution, something like that. Anyway, to 0.5%, acetic acid at 0.5% for 1 minute induced the cell death by 80%. That's not even that percentage. That's a half a percent. 1 minute killed 80%. So acetic acid, a powerful anti-cancer agent. That's cancer. Topical application of acetic acid may be a feasible approach to treatment of gastric cancer and possible other malignancies. Okay. Topical application of acetic acid by gastric submucosal or serosal injection can induce chronic ulcers within 3 to 5 days in animals, including mice, rats, cats, dogs, and mini pigs. These models have been used to study the ulcer healing process, the effect of the anti-ulcer drugs, including H2 receptor antagonists and proton pump inhibitors, for 45 years. In the animal studies, we showed that topical application for acetic acid promptly caused necrosis of tumor and suggests that this simple and reliable method may be used in cytoreductive treatment of gastric cancers in patients through endoscopy or laparoscopy. Tumor regeneration was delayed by denervation. Acetic acid, hydrochloric acid, ethanol was probably the culture medium added to the wells. When they even did a combination with alcohol next to vinegar, and alcohol did not touch what vinegar was touching. This is like I said, a cheap and easy, simple way to take things out. Now, if you are going to drink this stuff, you have to dilute it. It's something you've got to dilute. It's already at a 5% solution. For some of you who have, already have esophageal damage or gastric damage, you want to, mix it with water or mix it with some other medium. Even if you add it to yogurt, you got a win-win there, because the acetic acid gets in down into the colon, and if there is any tumorous growth or any anomalous proteins down there, it will help break it up and get rid of it. So basically, they go in on and on about the whole concept about cancer and the different types, acetic acid treatment for 1 minute induced 82.9% of cell death. When treatment was extended to 5 minutes, the cell death was 98.1%. When treatment was 10 to 30 minutes, there was no or little cell survived. This could be used even topically on skin cancers. Vinegar. Who would have thought? Vinegar. White vinegar. Don't let anybody bamboozle you. I don't care if they're a guru. I don't care if they're a doctor. Don't let anybody bullsh you into this or out of this. This is one of the best healing, cheap healing methods that you have right at your disposal. For those of you who are poor, this is a very inexpensive way to buy a healing agent. Vinegar, you go to a dollar store these days, and for 4 liters or 3 liters in Canada, 4 quarts in the United States, you can buy it for under $2. And again, it's a very healing agent there. So again, like I said, when you look at this report, it says, a recent study shows that the Kato 3 cells are highly resistant to pH changes in the culture medium. That is 90 to 100% cell viability from pH of 7.5 to pH 5.5. So they can still exist in that range. They could survive, you know, the higher pH. So when they gave it acetic acid, given at 1% concentration, it induced cell death, Kato 3 cells, by 41.7% at a pH 6.8 in the culture medium. That might suggest that the acetic acid induced cell death was a direct cytotoxic effect, which was independent of pH in the medium. In other words, it doesn't matter if it's pH or not, high or low, the vinegar will take it out. Again, vinegar. So, they wanted to know why, for instance, the human cancer cells were more receptive to being treated with vinegar than even the mice they tried. You know, they're, like I said, they're looking at all kinds of things. The results of the present study shows that 0.5% acetic acid almost completely induced cell death of MSTO211H and ACC-MESO1. We may suggest using acetic acid approach for treatment of this malignancy. You know, so again, you know, another research tidbit that again will go a long way in helping you come up with better solutions at treating things. Vinegar is basically a heal-all for those of you who have the lesions on the face, behind the neck, underneath the ear, along your body. This is something you may want to use. You can either cut it with a miracle soap. I've done that with, I've added borax. This is my formula that I do with miracle soap. I put in a quarter cup of borax in there with it. I put about 20 drops, probably more like a teaspoon of iodine in there. Then I've added probably a half a cup of vinegar, and I shake it up, and so that it all breaks down. So the reason why I'm doing it that way is so the borax will also release boric acid. So boric acid as well as the acetic acid with the iodine, which is also a powerful disinfectant, and I'm using it as a carrier or base to be able to apply it to the skin. And what happens is the borax also helps the body remove any excess radiation from the system, and the borax also amplifies the magnesium that's in the soap as well. So anytime you're taking magnesium orally, you might want to take boron or borax with it to help again amplify the effect of magnesium. All right, I think there you have it. You know, another fun-filled day. Geez, an hour and a half. That's about what I was planning for. Again, if you're interested in some of the information I have, feel free to send me an email, independs@yahoo.com. Feel free to go there. Don't forget to check out the website, augmentinforce.com, and check out the Podomatic later. You will be checking out the Podomatic because you'll be listening to it. But tell your friends about it, independs.podomatic.com. And don't forget the YouTubes. The YouTubes are very informative. They're a how-to, hands-on illustrations to help you, again, come up with better solutions to treating your bodies to a healing, wholeness, completeness. You know, this is what we're looking for. We're not looking to be treated. We're looking to have results. And that's what you should be demanding by the allopathic field. This is what you should be demanding by anybody who you're trying to see. If they can treat you and help you all along the way, that's great. But you yourself have to look for the answers. You yourself will have to discover the answers. You will not get assistance from the hospitals. You will not get assistance from most of your doctors. There's only 1-2% of physicians today in the medical field that actually give a damn about you. And they will try to help you heal. Okay? The rest do not care. They do not care. They don't want to talk to you. They just want you to follow orders. They expect you to take those pills without asking them any questions. If you ask them questions, a lot of times they get irritated and irate at you. So again, this is something that you need to push. if you're finding a medical practitioner being that asinine, then you may want to look for somebody else who will do the job, will explain to you the complications of the medications you're taking, and again, offer the option of a supplement as opposed to a drug. You know, this is something you can do. There are some drugs that are beneficial. There are some drugs that can assist you. But again, with minimal side effects. You know, aspirin is one of those. If you combine it with magnesium, it can have a benefit as far as, again, and you can combine it also with sunflower lecithin. It can actually have a very powerful effect as far as healing 8 different cancers as an analgesic, anti-inflammatory, as an antioxidant. If you combine it with copper, it produces an SOD-like effect. So it has its uses, and it can be applicable with other things as well. So again, not everything is bad, but the majority of you who are on statins, you need to get off them. They are causing genetic damage and DNA damage as well. And you can use things like these acids to help break down these fats and utilize these fats and break up any damage or congestion in the colon. You can also use enzymes to do the same thing. You can use things like garlic, onion, ginger, galangal will do the same thing. You can use beets, will do the same thing, produces nitric oxide and produces high levels of hydrochloric acid in the stomach. So these are things that you can use. So instead of using drugs, use things that works with your biochemistry. You know, you're dealing with all kinds of unwanted issues, and you are dealing with things today that we never dealt with before. You're dealing with synthetic biology. You're dealing with genetically engineered insects. You're dealing with insects that have been, again, violated with nanotechnology. This is a concept for some of you. I'm going to leave you with this last moment of thought. If the insects are feeding off of other insects, and those insects, for instance, like grasshoppers that eat a lot of grasses, have high levels of nanotechnology in them. And let's say a spider catches these grasshoppers and feeds on them. What happens to that spider? What impact does it have on that spider? If the spider should bite you, would it now release nano inside of you? If a grasshopper bit you, would it also leave nano? You know, if a praying mantis scratched you, would it now drop nano inside of you? If a mosquito bites you, okay, if a mosquito bites you and it has been exposed to nanotechnology, it's going to inject the nano inside of you. So again, it's a perfect means of biowarfare. You know, you don't even have to do anything. Just, you know, raise mosquitoes, genetically engineer mosquitoes to carry a nano delivery method of whatever toxin you want to put into it. They bite the people die. You know, this kind of thing is not that far-fetched. Hitler was talking about this back in the Second World War, and they have the Zika virus. If you sit there and think about it, look at that mosquito. That mosquito looks too streamlined to be a normal-looking mosquito. I remember mosquitoes looked, they looked very sluggish. You know, now, they look like a fighter jet. Is anybody else seeing this? So take a look at some of the things, and this is some of the things that make you go, You know, if you're in high levels of vegetation, you're for sure going to be get high levels of nano in your system. You know, there's no way around it. If you're going to eat vegetables, let me reiterate, eat the roots. They won't have as much topical exposure, and because they're underground, they may be able to, again, you still are going to have to peel them. If you look under a scope, even a 60x scope, you will see nano, contrary to what you've been told. The only time you don't see nano is at 1 to 50 nanometers, and if it's already penetrated into something. Anything that's above 100 nanometers will cluster. That's what you're seeing, is the cluster. You're not seeing the actual nanoparticle. If you go on YouTube and type in Rice University in nano, you will see nanoparticles right there. And you'll see them activate those nanoparticles right there in front of you with a frequency. If they can do that in the lab, what can they do out here with all these towers? These are things you want to look at. You know, all those nanoparticulates are up in the sky. They're self-assembling and they're spreading. It's creating a blanket over the planet. We're not seeing the sun like we used to. We're not even seeing the sky like we're used to. You know, and then on top of that, we're being poisoned down here. We're being fumigated and poisoned at the same time. So this is something that you want to take a look at. And those towers that they're coming out with, new 5G, the reason why they're coming out with the 5G is because they're far more penetrating. And because you have nanotechnology inside you, they can activate more people with this technology. So this is something that you need to investigate. This is not science fiction. We're beyond science fiction. You know, this is science reality today, and this is what we're dealing with. And if you start looking at some of the experiments that the Navy's done with HAARP, there was one YouTube where I forget what it was called now, you'd have to look it up, where the Navy had tightened the vortex so tight, it was only like maybe a 10-inch diameter. It hit the water. A pod of dolphins were in the water. It literally fried them, scorched them. And when they got them on the ground, they were all burnt. Top layers of their skin was burnt off. They were reddish colored from the irritation of this frequency. So we are not in those days of, you know, a simple nuke anymore. We've now gone sophisticated. All right. Well, that's something to leave you thinking. Enjoy the vids, enjoy the research, enjoy the audio. Again, check out the sites, check out the YouTubes, and check out the radio show. All right, till next week, have a good week. Learn things, research things, test everything you read. Test. All right, take care.